Hi, welcome to Thomas Anonymous with Tommy Natoli. That's me. Today's show I present to you Chapter 21, California Creaming. I know, that title is a little bit too much, and even I thought that as I was brainstorming chapter titles, but if I had that thought, that's when I knew I had to do it. Because, like, if you think, oh my god, I think that's a little bit too much, that's when you should, like, buckle down and do it 10 times harder. So, there's just a quick lesson in commitment for everyone. Yay! So after our trip to Cali, I'm going to have a very special, super secret guest join me for a little bit. And here's just a hint for you guys. It's Michelle with 1L. All right, everyone, buckle up because it's going to be a truthful ride. My name's Tommy Natoli, and this is Thomas Anonymous. Chapter 21, California Creaming. Nowadays, when I visit Wareham, I spend most of the time there pondering and daydreaming. First, I'm super nostalgic and I think, oh my god, my hometown is so quaint and cute, and I do my fair share of time skipping down memory lane. That's where I got hit by a car on my bike! Aw, that's where I did cocaine and got fired! That's where Kate walked over a flattened possum corpse! Ah, Wareham. The rare visits that I am there, I kind of can't believe it's real and that the place in my memory still stands in existence. It's been over 10 years since I left, and when I'm there, I'm left with a feeling of pride for having escaped. No matter what shape my career ever takes or doesn't take, I am already a success just by not being in Wareham. I remember the day I left. Wait a second, do I? I left twice because if you know anything about the curse of Wareham, it's that nobody escapes the first time, and they're usually going to Florida. Actually, now that I think about it, I think it took 3 times if we count the time I went to New York, which I guess we have to, because, yeah. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. I left for California on an Amtrak train. Yes, you heard me. On a train! Why a train? Well, okay, at the time, a one-way ticket was cheaper on the train than it was to fly, and also, I was making a big, big move across the country with no plan and barely any money. I did not need to jet-set 6 hours to my new life. I needed the 3-day trip to process what the hell I was doing, and not to mention prepare myself to see my dad. I had not seen him in a decade, and the train offered me some time to think and compartmentalize all of this while gazing out to the landscape of America. So seen. The train is awesome, because I also got to do a shit ton of writing and binge read some Dan Brown novels. Also, I hate to brag here, but it was 2007 and I had a super high-tech MP3 player, so take that, me. The train is a pretty cool experience, and I think everyone should do it in their lifetime, but don't do it the way I did it. Wait until you actually have some money to do it right. I was able to hang because I was 24, and what the fuck ever, you guys, I'm 24, I do what I want. The train has fancy sleeper cars for long trips, but I was not on one of those. Oh no, not this bitch. I was just in a regular seat, upright position, for 3 goddamn days. And the train is like its own little horrible camp or hotel. You have, like, your seat, and that's, like, your tent or your area, but then you have free rein to roam about the train. There is a viewing car, and that is the part of the train that's just all windows and has seats and booths for passengers. And there's also, like, a dining car. It's super cute. And it's in those places that I met and saw the most interesting, strange people. A Rastafarian man sang me a song one day in the snack bar car, and it wasn't just a casual tune. This was like a man sitting directly across from me making awkward eye lock and singing a bad original melody. Another time, a guy was sitting across from me, and he went on and on about he was a manager for musicians, and he was clearly full of shit, but it was really fun to watch him get really drunk. And speaking of, I got shit-tanked with a bunch of straight bros I never saw again. The train is fabulous. Oh, and they sometimes show a movie. It was an amazing 3-day trip across country meeting Amish people and smoking cigarettes in Utah. I've taken the cross-country train trip 3 times in my life, so honestly, it could be its own chapter or even book, but I'm too busy for that. As we approached Los Angeles, it was early dawn, and the sunrise was welcoming me like glowing orange stage lights revealing Act 2. The West Coast. Something about the colors of that morning sun, and I knew I was exactly where I was supposed to be. Then the reality of seeing my dad whacked me upside the head and I had to get my shit together. Dad was picking me up at Union Station, downtown Los Angeles, and then taking me back up to his tiny mountain town he had been living in. As I got off the train and made my way through the station, I was so excited to have finally arrived. I made it to California! Me! I had to go inside to call him because I needed to find a payphone. Google it, kids. Yes, a payphone, because I made that train trip cross-country with no phone. Yeah, I'm fucking hardcore, you guys. Come on, keep up. Anyway, I found a payphone and dug out the envelope full of change that I had brought just for the purpose of having to call people. See, I may not ever have a real concrete plan, but I'm always prepared. Don't fuck with my preparation, because it's top-notch, grade A, top-of-the-line prep. Me. What I wasn't prepared for was when my dad answered the phone and said, "Ah, shit, fuck, is that today? Is there any way you can take a train to a closer town?" "Yeah, Dad, I literally just got off the train in Los Angeles from Boston, and I'm well-versed on the commuter rail system here." "No! Come fucking get me! Ugh!" He told me it was gonna be about 5 hours, but then he'd be there. 5 hours? I've been sitting on a train for 72 hours in my own human grossness. Sure, I don't mind waiting around the Los Angeles heat 5 more hours. Take your time! To be fair, his stupid mountain town was 2 hours away, and he had just recovered from a major aneurysm, so I didn't throw the tantrum most people would expect me to. I still had a book that I hadn't read on the train, so I busted it out and I sunk deep into Stephen King's misery. I sat outside Union Station with my long pink hair hidden under my army green bandana, safety pin earrings, and pyramid-studded jeans that I had made all by myself like a true fucking scenester. Me! I know, I get it, I was pretty fucking emo, but I was still fabulous me, and my integrity stands by all of my choices, even if those choices are horrible fashion statements, poser piercings, and my love for Panic at the Disco. I was fully engulfed into my book when a man's voice immediately got my attention. "Hey, you need a ride?" I looked up and locked in on the voice, who I did not recognize at all. But then I realized, holy shit, that's him, that's my dad. He stood next to his butch white truck with that beaming smile saying something about what the fuck. My dad said what the fuck a lot. It was like kind of his brand. "What the fuck?" He looked so different to me. I was really thrown off and I tried so hard to not look shocked. I mean, sure, like he just had his issues with his health and everything, but I knew my dad as a younger 40-somethinger who wore skinny jeans, had long dark hair, and worked at the Hard Rock Cafe. And right now, I was looking at a gray-haired, aged, chubby version of that person. The ride to the small mountain town was filled with scenic views of massive mountains that don't even exist on the East Coast. My dad was a general contractor, and one of his man workers was driving the truck and chain-smoking Camel cigarettes. After the long-as-fuck drive up to Pine Mountain Club, California, we finally arrived. This was and is a super cute, tiny, adorable mountain village full of retired folks and young people hiding from the law. There were two sides of town, the side with the dive bar and the restaurant, and then across the street was the fancy country club. Did I just move 3,000 miles across the country to another small town hours away from the real city? Yep, I sure did. But at first I didn't care because I was so excited to be in California and to be starting a new life and meeting new people. Day one, I realized my dad was like a local celebrity as we walked into the dive bar and a crowd of people inside immediately cheered with glee that he had arrived. And that basically happened everywhere we went. They all called him Boston Mike. It doesn't take rocket science to figure that one out. His name was Michael, and he was from Boston. Mountain folk keep it simple. We'd go into the coffee shop, Boston Mike! Into the general store, Boston honey, how are you? Into the hardware store, Boston! At first, I was slightly offended when I would meet everyone because every single person's first reaction to Boston Mike's son was, "Oh my god, you have a kid?" To which I would always chime in, "He has 6 kids. Bursted that fucking bubble. Me. To be totally honest, this was a magical time because I didn't have my dad growing up. I met him when I was 12 years old, and just the word dad was so awkward and foreign to me. But this situation of being 3,000 miles away from home and starting anew was awesome. People talked to us and treated us as if we were father and son that grew up together and spent our whole lives knowing each other. They didn't know all the, like, real dysfunction, and I did not care to correct them. As emo as it is, I feel like this time I got to have with my dad really fixed a part of my childhood heart that had been so broken and sad up until that point. And I'm super lucky and grateful because there are millions of boys who grew up in our country who never know their dad or never get to have any kind of dad experience. And at the time, I knew I was lucky too, so I really did try and enjoy and cherish that time together. But then my dad wanted me to help with his business, his construction business, which I pretended at first to totally be into, until he wanted me to hang drywall one day with his worker, Fernando. And I had to break to him, like, "Look, Dad, unless you're trying to hook me up with Fernando, this is a hard no for me." Day three, out in my new California life, my dad introduced me to the owner of the restaurant below the dive bar, and before I knew it, I had a full-time job at the Screaming Squirrel restaurant. You heard me. We didn't serve squirrels, but we did have a convicted felon as the head cook, and the owner was always buying us shots on the job, so all in all, a great place to work. The Screaming Squirrel was a party job. We would smoke weed in the kitchen, we'd use those plastic 2-ounce sauce cups for shots, and overall participated in excessive debauchery. Since my dad was a local celebrity, I instantly became his local celebrity son and was accepted by mostly everyone right away. Except the haters, but hate is gonna hate yo. Pine Mountain Club, PMC, is a crazy, cute village town with a bazillion wackadoodle characters that you just cannot believe are real. This part of life could also be its own book, but I don't have that kind of time. Also, don't care. As I made friends and worked my new job in the new town with my new life, I realized I had to leave my dad. Not abandon him, just move out of his house. I liked this magical new bro bond we were having, drinking beers with him on the deck outside, watching the mountain sunset, going to taco night together and then boozing it up even though he wasn't supposed to. Oh, it sounds like we were dating. When we were at home around his girlfriend, he had a whole system of lies, like he would say, "Get me a green." And what that meant was to go get a non-alcoholic beer for him, dump it out, and pour a real beer in that bottle. He was a genius! All that stuff was great. What wasn't great was starting to see the real at-home mood swing version of my dad. Out and about in public, my dad was the man. He was a super social happy butterfly. But then sometimes at home, his darkness would take over, and I could hear through the wall things like, "Leave me alone, you fucking cunt!" Oh, that's where I get it from. Copy that. I stayed with him for maybe a month, and then I moved out and rented a room from a girl in a trailer. Me. I loved my dad, and I wanted to keep the newfound relationship we had in the positive, and if I stayed there in his house, I would have grown to hate him and be super annoyed by him. I remember the moment that did it for me. It was a window into what I would have hated about my dad if I had grown up with him. My brother Mikey had come out for a couple weeks, and we were all hanging on the back deck at Dad's. My brother and I decided to go in the hot tub, and we were all drinking, having a good time, but the water in the hot tub was super duper hot. I don't know the exact temperature, and I love hot tubs, but this thing was just set too fucking high. Like, we couldn't put more than our feet in because it was scalding. And that's when my dad kind of lost it on us. Me and my brother sitting on the edge of the hot tub while he yelled and yelled about, "Just get in the fucking hot tub, you pussies!" Like, it was a very stereotypical moment of a dad emasculating his sons, which thanks to Fat Matt, I was very well versed in dealing with. I didn't react at all, I just sat there and let him yell. Mostly because he was drunk, and saying or doing anything in those situations is pretty useless. In that moment, I was grateful for my stupid mom, grateful that she left him, grateful that he wasn't part of my childhood. Like, sure, Fat Matt sucked ass, but at least he wasn't a drunk. So I knew then at that hot tub moment that I couldn't stay with him because I didn't want my newfound dad world to be tainted by his weird darkness. I have enough of my own darkness, I don't need that. Keep that shit to yourself. Dad, I'm moving to the trailer park! I'm glad I did move. Not only did it open me up to a whole new world of independence, but it kept me and my dad's relationship intact. By leaving my dad's house, I was able to always experience the best version of him. He used to walk right into the kitchen of the Screaming Squirrel and give my grown 24-year-old ass a hug and a kiss. He didn't care, and it was fucking awesome. One night at the bar, he and I were outside smoking cigarettes, and he started talking about this girl, Jessica, that was nearby. He was doing that man thing, talking about how hot she was, and how he would do this, and he would do that with her. He'd take her camping and have a great time. And my 24-year-old ego could not help but think, hello, you're like 50-something, and there's no way in hell she's gonna go camping with you. Plus, not to mention, you have a girlfriend at home. So I did what any other son would have done in that situation, and I fucked Jessica. I ended up fucking Jessica a few times, but unlike my ladies in the past, it was becoming more and more difficult to do that. You know, have sex with girls. Oh yeah, I was still gay. Got it. The sex wasn't bad, it was just really super awkward. And the best part here was that I was repeating my patterns as Jessica had 2 kids and was a single mom. Jesus fucking Christ, Tommy, are you seriously doing this again? Is that your type? And like, all for what? To prove to your dad you can crush puss? Well, yeah. Even though he knows I'm bi, and even though I spent a better part of the previous year getting blown by men at rest stops, there was still that deep-rooted need in me to prove to him that I am masculine man who can get attractive woman. We will make babies and find mortgage. You be proud. Me. It's okay. We, dated a very short time, and then I cut it off by not speaking to her for a couple weeks. Duh. Jessica was the last time I ever had sex with a girl. Wait a minute, was it? No, it wasn't. Shit, I almost forgot about Mrs. Robinson. Okay, so Mrs. Robinson was a 40-year-old MILF, and she was always super drunk and super horny. I totally had sex with Mrs. Robinson 1.5 times thanks to a bottle of vodka and 14 Xanax. Just kidding, it was one Xanax, and I felt great. And for the record, she was super tight. Mr. Robinson was super pissed, but he couldn't have been that mad because later down the road, he and I would end up making out and me playing with his D. Sounds like the joke's on him. Anyway, that was the last time I slept with a woman. Wait a minute, was it? Oh, God, shit, no, it wasn't. I forgot about the three-way I had with this guy Derek and his girlfriend. His girlfriend was really dragging the party down, but I rallied for them. Derek was a hipster 20-somethinger who always hung in the coffee shop in town. We would both always be in there because I worked next door, and it was a small village where the only thing to do in the morning was hang out at the coffee shop. That, and it was the only place in town with Wi-Fi. After a few weeks of small talk and subtle hints of pansexuality being dropped, Eric finally heard the rumors around town that I was bi. Sure, whatever. He asked me if sometime when his girlfriend was in town visiting, if I wanted to three-way with them. I'm super big into the yes and thing, especially if it's something I'm not sure I want to do. I immediately agree to it and then spend all the time in between panicking about what I just agreed to. Me. At this point, I'd had my fling with Jessica, banged a 40-year-old hot mom, and I was just ready to be done with my charade of loving puss. My super-duper horniness of being a teenager had worn off, and I was now getting to a point where I just couldn't get hard for girls. My erections were appearing only for boys, and I was okay with that. After a few weeks of tease-talking about our three-way, Eric was getting super pumped about it and was obsessed with DP.
Double penetration.
He was very explicit most every time I saw him how he wanted one of us to be in her V and one of us to be in her A. Okay, I get it. All I could think was, does this poor girl really want this to happen? Because it sounds so busy on her part. I started to secretly hope that the girlfriend would never have time to come visit. Yeah, that's it, and then maybe me and Derek could just blow each other and have a nice, relaxing night together. Of course, the second I had that thought was the day they both arrived at the coffee shop. Fuck. Ugh. I did a really good job at avoiding them and blowing them off when confronted with arranging the three-way. I really didn't want to fuck this chick, but I was super into Derek, so like now what do I do? Am I gonna fuck this girl with her boyfriend just to get and be close to her boyfriend? You bet your gay ass I'm gonna. I truly was avoiding them, which is why they ended up having to ambush me at work. One night, while closing down the luxurious Screaming Squirrel restaurant, Derek and girlfriend walked in and we exchanged our normal pleasantries of how are you, what's going on at the bar tonight, blah 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 blah. After some small talk, they let me know that they have their place all set up for us and that if I wanted to, I could come over tonight. Me, being the professional liar and ghoster, immediately told them I was way too gross. I just cleaned the grease trap and it just wasn't a good night. Sorry. They said they figured that and that they had an extra pair of clothes waiting for me at their place with a hot shower. Oh, brother. Great, I said. That works. Well, let me just close up here and then I'll meet you over there. They said no, they would wait for me. Damn, they're onto my shadiness. Sure enough, they waited until I was done, and then we all drove back to their place. When we entered the house, the living room had been turned into a sex bedroom. A king-sized mattress was in the middle of the room with sheets, blankets, and pillows surrounding it like a soft, cozy road barrier. There were even these silk-like pieces of fabric hanging from the ceiling and draped over lamps, and it felt like a Roman orgy was about to go down. I was scared shitless. Meanwhile, Eric was getting hard, and his girlfriend was leading me into the bathroom for my shower. She was naked and in the shower telling me to come in and join her. Everything in me was just like, no, I don't want to get in that shower. I told her that I had to get my clothes out of the car. And she looked confused. What? Why? But we have some clothes here for you. Oh, no, no, I said as I slowly backed out of the bathroom. I need the ones I have in my car. I'll be right back. And we all know what happens next. I got in my car and peaced the fuck out of there. Me! I don't know what I was thinking. It's not like we were in the city and I would have a good chance of avoiding them. This was a mountain town with like two fucking people in it, so of course I was gonna have to see them again. I was on edge for 3 or 4 days just waiting for them to bombard the restaurant or coffee shop, but they didn't. I was really hoping the universe would just clear a path for all of us to never see each other again. A couple weeks later, after my grill grease shift, I went upstairs to the bar for my usual double Jack and Coke. After I slammed back a few of those and was chatting with my bar acquaintances, I was caught off guard by Derek and his girlfriend walking into the bar.
Fuck.
Well, at least I'm drunk, so whatever happens now, I might not even remember, so that's the good news. We all chatted for a bit, and of course I apologized and blamed it on feeling too greasy from work, and they apologized for coming on so strongly, and then bam, we were all in the car again going back to their place. However, this time when we entered, there was no Roman orgy set up in the living room. They didn't expect to find me that night, and so our fabulous three-way scene was now going to take place in Derek's 9x7 bedroom on his twin mattress that lived on the floor. Perfect. I'm from Wareham. This is much more my style. This time I was drunk, so things were going much better. But I was still really struggling with that girl being there. She would kiss me and I would feel nothing, and then Derek would kiss me and I would feel everything. Yes, more of you, Derek! She got down on her knees to service us both, and I was so turned off. There was Derek standing next to me with his D totally hard as his girlfriend sat on her knees in front of us, and I had nothing but soft serve. It was sad, kind of. She was so desperate to turn me on, turn us on. She was making noises like a girl in a porno. Like, fuck, get this bitch out of here. Long story short, we had the three-way, and the only good parts for me were the gay ones. Derek blew me for like a good 10 minutes while she watched, and even though I was finally not soft serve, I could see it in her eyes that she hated that her boyfriend had a dick down his throat, and hated that I only got hard for him. That's understandable. Isn't that the downfall to every three-way? We did everything Derek wanted to do, including his precious DP. He asked if I bottomed, and I totally lied and was like, yeah, for sure! When the truth was, I had never really done that yet. Yeah, well, when he put the tip in, I recoiled like a baby because it felt like fire. Ah, get out of here! God, Tommy, stop yes-anding everything. Jesus. He could tell I totally lied and was an ass virgin, so like a true versatile, he flipped over and had me top him. Now, he clearly had bottomed a lot as he took my D like a champ, and again, that look from his girlfriend made me think, is all this really okay? And then I thought, is it weird that I'm screwing a guy, or weird that his girlfriend is watching me fuck him? I don't remember how it finished. I don't even think I finished. I just remember it was sunrise when I left, so all in all, a decent three-way. Man, I really have no spine when it comes to peer pressure. What? You want me to fuck your girlfriend that I'm not really interested in with you, all to live out your fantasy I don't care about? Okay! Now that was the last time I ever had sex with a girl. Wait a minute, was it? No, yeah, it really was, for sure, the last one. That's a wrap on Tommy Screwin' Ladies. Fuck, I gotta get out of this mountain town before I have sex with everyone in it. You did it! Yay! That's it, you guys. We listened to Chapter 21, California Creaming. Creaming. I don't know why I said it like that. California Creaming. It's a wholesome family story about a three-way. No, actually, there was more in there than just the three-way. That was just kind of like the cherry on top there. But yeah, that was my arrival to California, and I wanted to, as I said in the beginning of the show, have a special guest on to talk about this. Now, this is a little different because I am ambushing them. I'm ambushing Michelle with one L. And because she's a Pine Mountain Club expert, we're just going to do this. I've never done this before. We're just going to live ambush. Oh, God, that might be too loud.
Hello?
Hello? Is this Michelle with 1L?
Yes, it is.
Can you hear me?
Hello. Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, well, because you're live on the podcast right now.
Ah, jeez.
I know. Sorry. I had to call a Pine Mountain Club expert, and so I was like, I guess it's Michelle with 1L.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So this is, you didn't listen to last week, but basically it's a whole new thing where like I am all about being lazy and not editing. So yeah, you haven't listened to the chapter, but basically it was all about Pine Mountain Club. So I'm just going to ask you questions since you're going to be the expert. You don't even know what's going on right now. That's what's so great about this.
I don't, and I'm echoing.
I'm echoing or you're echoing?
No, I'm echoing.
Oh. Well, you're not echoing over here.
Well, then that's all that matters.
How are you? How's it going? Tell everyone how you are.
I'm fabulous. I'm sitting outside drinking a cocktail.
What is Pine Mountain Club?
Pine Mountain Club is a tiny, teeny, tiny little community in the mountains, up past the grapevine, where people go to retire or to be booze bags.
That's exactly how I described it.
Yeah, but it smells good.
And how many wackadoodle weird characters would you say live up there?
Every single one that lives up there.
What was your favorite one? Like, if you could pick one, what would it?
Oh, my God. There's too many crazy people.
What about Honey? Honey, when I was in the 70s, I had big tits and lots of cocaine.
I know. She was fabulous. But I really enjoyed her husband, because when he would dance at the clubhouse, he would always tuck his shirt into his underpants. And he'd wear, like, BBDs, you know? And then his pants would ride a little bit lower, so you could see that his shirt was tucked into his underwear.
Oh, that's Brian. Brian, big nose, big dick, honey.
Yep. I thought he was fabulous. I don't know. I don't want to say anybody's name because I'm worried.
I know. Let's move on. Let's talk about my dad, Boston Mike. Do you remember meeting Boston Mike?
Yes. I do. At Mad Bailey's, and he was a big old flirt.
What?
Super nice. I know, super nice, but didn't he have something done with his teeth because they were really bad, or he didn't have them, or I don't know. But every single time anything went wrong, it was Boston's Mike's job. It was his job to, like, fix it, whether it was the stairs, people falling down the stairs. Oh, we need to fix the stairs. You know, the balcony's falling down.
Right, because he was deck, like a whatever. Construction guy, and he would like, he would ho dunk like stuff that needed to be done. Like, I remember when I got there that he had just like started to do the steps to Mad Bailey's or rebuild the steps or something like that.
Yeah, so he was their personal contractor, and every time he got sick, they would put a shot on the bar for him.
So respectful.
It was super respectful, and I remember one time Wendy got, no, it was Christy, got so mad. She's like, you're not dead, you guys!
Oh, my God. Good. Hold on a second. The blanket behind me is falling down. I'm in the closet.
Okay.
Oh, God. It's my sound barrier. All right. I'm a producer.
Awesome.
What kind of cocktail do you have right now?
The usual. Vodka, Diet Tonic. Only, actually, it's not the usual because I have a splash of pineapple juice in it instead of Diet Cranberry, because I opened some pineapple juice because I'm making Hawaiian chicken kebab.
Wow, you are fabulous.
Yeah, I know.
All right, let's talk about us. Let's talk about, because basically this chapter is like my train trip and arrival to California and meeting my dad and walking into this crazy small village of a town and just being like, what?
Mm-hmm. And you look ridiculous.
What did I look like?
You were wearing, like, painter's clothes, and you had a thing on your head, like a do-rag only for white people.
It's a bandana. It's called a bandana.
Whatever. And I remember you had a safety pin in your ear.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about my cool tongue piercing.
I don't remember your tongue being pierced, but it was funny because Shannon and I were like, oh, my God, that's Boston Mike's kid. And you were fabulous. And then you took off your do-rag / whatever you called it, bandana, and you had pink hair. And I was like, oh, my God, you look ridiculous.
No, here's exactly what you said. We were all out on the deck. We had all just met inside, drinking. And we're all out smoking on the front deck. And I took my bandana do-rag off my head. Your voice overtook the whole crowd and said, ah, you were so cute until you took that hat off.
Oh. You know what? I think you might be right. That is what I said. That was best friend. That is it.
And then we were best friends. All right. So then in this chapter, I go through, I just like my last little dabblings with vagina. So do you remember that girl, Jessica?
Duh.
What do you remember? Tell me what you remember about that.
I remember she had like a self, like a Celtic, is it called Celtic? What? Irish tattoo on the inside of her arm.
Oh, yeah, she did.
Yeah, it was green. It was very poorly done. She had dark hair, and I remember little Kayla was furious that you had a girlfriend.
Oh, that's right.
And then he was making out in the Park before Shakespeare, when you were doing Shakespeare in the Park.
Yes. Really?
Yes,
wow.
Yes, we were totally making out. And then that was when you lived with Donnie.
Mm-hmm.
And you would go back to Donnie's house, and you guys would do it, and Donnie would be so mad because you guys would be doing it, and you were playing that white tees, that t-shirt. What's that song?
This is, you always
oh,
bring...
Oh, Delilah.
You all...
Yeah, and Donnie would be furious, and she'd call me up, and she'd go, this is so... Oh, my God, I can't believe it. It'd be Delilah, but I better get a chance. Yeah.
I love that every time I've asked you about her, that's the part you remember, is that stupid song, which honestly only lived in Donnie's head, none of ours.
No, I don't know that for a fact. That's just what she told me, but I know that everything she says is true.
True, you're right.
Bam.
You're right. I was probably like on a picnic with Jessica and was like, you know, the Delilah song, that's our song.
Yeah, that's what I heard. It was your song. That was you guys' song. And every time you guys were banging it out in the bedroom, that was the song that was playing.
Well, we didn't even do it that much, and it was like always really awkward.
Yes,
anyway.
You did. Donnie said you did. God, what is a lie? That's all you guys ever did.
Oh, it's what you do to me.
Yep, that's the song, all right. You and Jessica, friends. No, you guys were like forever. You guys were going to like get engaged and...
Oh,
didn't we have a barbecue and she came to the barbecue one time over at my house?
Yes.
And I kept sitting on your lap just to piss her off.
That's what I was going to bring up next is, I mean, first of all, the whole thing with Jessica was that, like, it was just like this weird, like, macho masculine thing with my dad that, like, I had to prove to him that, like, I could, you know, get this girl. But then, yes, we came to your barbecue. It was like your kid's birthday. Who knows what it was? But, yeah, you were, like, on my lap in a lounge chair, and then, like, some drama went down. Was that the party that Brian was at?
Oh, that was different drama when Brian was there. That was potato salad drama.
Oh, my God. Do you remember Mrs. Robinson? She's in this story.
Who? Oh!
Don't you remember her? She was crazy. She was like this crazy drunk lady, always super horny. She was the one that like I had a bunch of Xanax and a vodka and banged it out. But remember, she was super duper tight.
Yep. I remember you telling me about her.
She's in the story. And then after her in the story is, do you remember that guy? This is a fake name. Derek. Do you remember
Derek.
The three-way I had with the guy?
D. Yeah.
The guy, the coffee shop guy, and then the girl.
Oh, wait. I was thinking about somebody else. I was thinking about, with big pumpkins. I'm seeing pumpkins.
Nope, that's a different one. That's a different, that's later down. This was early on. This was
really involved.
I know. As I went through this, I realized how involved I was in Pine Mountain Club. I was really, really committed.
God.
I did summer theater. I did three ways with girls. I mean, I was busy.
You were very, very busy, but wasn't that in the flop house or by the flop house?
No, that was, I think I was renting in the flop house, but basically they, it was this guy, Eric, or Derek, whatever, and his girl.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. Something about massages.
And his girlfriend, yes, it was the massage guy, yes, Shannon knows exactly who I'm talking about. I'm just name dropping everywhere. But him and his girlfriend tried to do a three-way with me one night, and then I peaced out, and I totally left in the middle of it all, and then they found me again 2 weeks later, and then I ended up doing it. But remember, the big thing of the story was I totally had soft serve for the girl.
Oh!
I know.
That was when you were like, wait a minute, this might not be right.
Yeah, that was my first, but this just brings like the first little chunk of Pine Mountain Club. I didn't get into all the, you know.
Oh my gosh. Well, we had years on all your jobs.
Falling asleep in parking lots with the car running. We haven't gotten to any of that yet.
Oh, and that's going to be all today?
No. All today is just.
I was going to say, we're going to be on the phone for hours.
No. This is it. The three-way was the headliner of this story. So that was it.
Yeah, I just was confused as to which one because you had so many.
And the best part was none of them were hot or like cool. They were all horrible and like
they were all Pine Mountain Club threesomes.
So disgusting.
There's a limited amount of people in that little teeny tiny community.
I know, and you know, I almost went over Tom and Connie's one time. Do you remember them?
Yeah, Connie was the one that fell down and busted out all her teeth.
Yeah, and she's the one who got the tummy tuck and the boob job, and she would always show everybody. Like, literally, hey, I just met you. Let me show you my tits.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they talk about booze bags. She fell so many times. She knocked out all her teeth. She dislocated her shoulder.
Well, I have one more Pine Mountain memory I just want to go over real fast. And that is,
okay.
Let me know. I'm just going to say something to you, and I want your honest reaction.
Okay.
Michelle is a bipolar.
First of all, you're the one that gave her the pen.
Walk everyone through what I'm talking about.
That's a whole different episode, Evelyn.
You went into the
I went downstairs into the bathroom from the bar because downstairs was a screaming squirrel where you work.
Mm-hmm, they know
upstairs
that.
Upstairs was Mad Bailey's. And
yes.
There was an inside staircase that you went down. So I went downstairs, went into the bathroom, went in to go to the bathroom. And in there was Michelle, written in Sharpie, said, Michelle is a bipolar. And then first of all, I was like, okay, they're stupid because that's not even how you say it. And I thought it was Vicky. I thought for sure it was Vicky. And I was like, oh my God, I was so furious. And then I found out that you gave the pen to Evelyn to write it because she was mad because she was in love with Randy. And I told everybody that Randy was a bipolar. Not a bipolar, but he was bipolar.
Right. Exactly.
And I had come into the bathroom where she got scared off and she couldn't finish. She was going to say Michelle is a bipolar.
Bitch.
I don't know, I'm thinking bitch.
Yeah.
So all she got was Michelle is a bipolar. And I was so furious.
So this was the kind of like small town mountain drama that I lived for. So Evelyn, she's not in the chapter so quickly. She's like the kitchen mama. She was like the lady I worked with at the Screaming Squirrel who was like my, you know, kitchen mom. And so she and Michelle had this like whatever between her and husband. Who cares? And so she came into the kitchen with so mad like, ugh, I just want to go into the bathroom and write that she's a bipolar bitch. And I just reached over, grabbed a Sharpie, and was like, here you go. Go ahead and do it.
Turn that pot.
But yeah, she went in there to go do it, but then heard someone come down those stairs you described, and then didn't get to finish the sentence she was writing.
That is so freaking funny. And the fact that we're now friends is great.
I know. Well, that's the best part of the mountains.
I know. Nothing ever matters. And then the guy that we were fighting over ends up with Big Red. You gotta love it.
And can you believe I'm getting a call right now? That's ridiculous. Decline. Hello?
Okay. I'm here.
I'm here too. I think I'm done with you. It sounds windy.
It's very breezy and fabulous at my house.
All right, well, I'm sweating in a closet right now, so I'm gonna let you go.
No, I'm going to let you go.
All right, fine. You talked me into it.
Okay. All right. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. Michelle with one L, everybody. Yay. Oh, my God. That was so funny. I love when I get to, you know, Michelle and I have been friends for like 11 years now. And I love so much when we get to stroll down memory lane. We have had so many good times, bad times, crazy times. So, that was our chapter. That was my special guest chiming in. I'm trying to open up my fucking... It's just... Anyway, so we are in a day and age where if we don't have our phones out, we don't have our doc available that tells us what we're talking about. So, yeah, thank you, Michelle, for dealing with me and on all of my bipolarness. So, thanks for listening to this chapter, you guys. I've been working hard on Thomas Anonymous, all things Thomas Anonymous. I've been avoiding the news lately, which is not really like me. Usually I'm very, like, I want to stay, you know, involved and connected, and I want to know everything that's happening, but I just can't. And I know that I really know that I should not put my head in the sand and, like, fall asleep. That's what I did with George W. Bush's second term because I figured, oh my God, I can't believe he won a second term. And then I fell asleep for the next 4 years. I have to turn my thing down real quick. It is down. Okay, great. Oh, good for me. So, yeah, I've been avoiding news and, like, Here's the thing. I used to love, like, every night me and Rachel Maddow would have a date. You know, I love her long-winded 20-minute monologue that takes forever to get to where she's going. I love that there's always, like, some kind of history lesson of, like, 1917. A bunch of facts to bring us to today's story. Like, I love that. I love her. And I'll always love her. And I'm pretty sure I will get back into watching her. But, like, you just get to that point where you need a break. Like, I was so, like, so many people was just so, like, hopeful the first year of, and I don't want to, like, talk politics because, well, I'm going to, so deal with it. But I just, yeah, I was like everyone else, like, oh, and the investigation, oh, all these things are coming out. And now I, like everyone else, I'm realizing, like, nothing's going to happen. So just fucking relax. Nobody's going anywhere. Everything's just going to be horrible for a while. So just buckle up, you guys. What else is new with me? I'm trying to find a love for the grocery store because, you know, I just have such negative feelings towards it. It's just such, from everything, from the fact that I have to get food, prepare food, lug it all to my car, lug it all up into the apartment, then lug it into the stove, then lug it into my body, then lug it into the toilet. Like, the whole process is just infuriating for me. I just have grocery store venom. And as if all of that wasn't enough, like, everything else is, like, piling up on top of it, like, with the sweepers. The sweepers in the grocery store are killing me. I don't know what's going on with these sweepers, but they used to be very polite in the sense, they're those people, if you don't know, I mean, if you go to the grocery store, there's, like, everyone's doing something. There's a cashier doing their thing. There's people stocking. And then there are people with brooms that just walk with the broom. They just walk and walk and walk, and they're sweeping. And usually what the sweepers do, if you're, like, you know, browsing the cereal aisle and you're trying to find which one's on sale, because that's what I'm doing, usually they'll go around you because that's polite and obvious, like, what you would do in that situation. But nowadays, like, I don't know what's going on with these kids with brooms, but they will stop dead in their tracks while I'm looking at my box of Golden Grahams. And they will fucking wait for me to move. Wait for me to move! Oh, no! No, 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 no! You go around me, bitch! Okay? Go a fucking round me. I spend so much money in this store. So much money in that store. Have you ever looked at your bank statements at the grocery store bill? Holy fucking shitballs, you guys. So basically, I've been pouring millions of dollars into this grocery store, and now I have to move for the fucking sweeper? I know, you're like, why am I listening to your rants about the grocery store? I only have one more gripe with the grocery store, and that is don't tailgate. When you're in line at the grocery store, don't push your cart. Like, what are you trying to get to? Like, you know, I'm not going to move my cart for, I'm not going to tailgate the person's ass in front of me. But everyone behind me thinks that's totally fine. And I don't want to be sexist here because I'm all about equal rights, but it's always a fucking woman. It's always some fucking woman trying to, like get her shit on the, like, girl, we are not moving any faster, okay? Like, you tailgating my ass to get your fucking roll of toilet paper right there on the conveyor belt, like, it's not worth it. Please. I know you guys were all like, I think you need therapy, Tommy. I'm back in therapy, you guys. But I'm really inconsistent with my therapy. And I like my therapist now. He's really nice. He has a super cute name, and I'm not gonna say it, but he's good. He doesn't take my shit, which is why he's good, and he doesn't laugh at me, because that's my big problem with therapy, is that I look at it like a place where I get a 50-minute set and I get to go in and try to make them laugh. And that's how I can tell the therapist is bad. When I go in and they start, like, laughing and telling me how great I am, I'm like, I gotta get the fuck out of here, because, like, this is not what I need. So my therapist is good, but I'm inconsistent because he's so fucking expensive. I can't go every week. Like, I cannot afford to go to this guy every week. So I go when I can go, and it's great and all that jazz. But I was thinking, and feel free to, you know, whatever me, Insta-story me or something. The amount of money that you put into therapy, that I put into therapy, I feel like it would be so much more productive if I could just put that money into a psychic medium. You know, like someone, like a clairvoyant, someone who has a little bit more insight. I mean, therapy's great. They all have good tools and stuff. But I just feel like, wouldn't my money be spent more wisely if I was getting someone to tell me, you know, like what my dad thought about all this, you know, well, he's dead. So yeah. Spoiler alert, dad's dead, you guys. No, he's not. Well, I mean, he is dead. I don't know why I said no, he's not. The dead just sounds so negative. He has transitioned. He is now a beautiful shining light on the other side. He's invisible, you guys. But he's still all around us all the time. So that's my thing about that. What else is going on? Relationships. No, just kidding. Oh, wait, no. What did I say about relationships? I'm trying to, clearly I don't prepare for this podcast anymore. I just write bullet points down, and I wrote down the other day, I'm trying to write, and my boyfriend is blaring music and standing around naked looking at his phone. At what point is enough going to be enough for me? Who do I think I am? Yeah, that has no joke or anything. I guess I was just mad that he was standing there. I've been really frustrated with my day job, like everybody does, but the more you do creative things, oh my God, the blanket wall's falling down. The more I do creative things, like I've been out there doing stand up more, which makes me feel good. I love that. It's cool. But then like, I hate the day job. It's like every day goes by and I'm like, oh, I should be like working on the book or working on the podcast or working on the set or working on the whatever. And I do work on the whatever, but it just, yeah, I just need a new day job. I'm trying to think of a new day job plan for me. Because, like, at what point am I just going to get fed up with the rich white people and become a fucking real estate agent or truck driver? Those are the two options I'm going with right now. They're mostly jokes, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm kind of serious about it. I don't know. I don't think I've talked about my job before, but basically I deal with, really rich, white, privileged families who are horrible. And, you know, I've been at this job for 6 years, so it's like, I'm getting to that bubbling point where I'm like, if I have to hear one more fucking middle-aged white woman tell me about her pony class, oh, we can't make that class. We have pony class. Like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. We didn't grow up with pony class. We just had donkey class, you fucking idiot. God. So yeah, there's all sorts of horribleness I'm a witness to. You know, these parents with money, they don't... And I don't even know if it's a money thing. Maybe all parents are like this these days. It's just so different, and there's such a contrast to, like, my childhood. Like I work at a pool. It's no secret. I post it on all the time on Instagram. I work at a pool, and so kids don't want to leave the pool, you know, all the time. I don't want to go. You know, they had a fun time. They don't want to leave the pool. And instead of just telling the kid, we're fucking leaving, get in the goddamn car, these parents are like, okay. Oh, no, Humphrey, please. Humphrey. Yeah, his name's Humphrey. Humphrey. Humphrey, can we please leave? Mommy wants to leave. Humphrey. Humphrey, that is it. Mommy's setting a timer. And in 3 minutes, we're going to have a discussion about how I want to leave. Like, I can't believe it. Ugh. I know. Humphrey is a real name. Humphrey's a real name of a kid. I know a kid named Pangea. I know a kid named Zuzu. There's a kid named Kale. There's a kid named Isis. I know. Can you believe they named a kid Kale? I can't either. It drives me crazy. So that's what's going on with work. And the crazy names, and Zuzu, and Zuzu's fucking mom. Zuzu's mom is the worst, and she's always telling me, it's me, Zuzu's mom. Like, girl, I know, you are like the 9/11 of moms, okay? I'll always remember and never forget Zuzu's fucking mom. She is like the worst right now. And she, like, her, along with other parents, will do this where, like, I offer them a day to come. I'll be like, oh, I have Tuesday or Thursday, and they'll turn to their child and say, do you want to come on Tuesday or Thursday? Their kid's usually like 4 years old. Like, they are not busting out an agenda book like, Thursday's really busy, mom. Sure enough, they bust out an iPad and they're like, bitch, what's an agenda book? All right, that's my rant on that. I really didn't plan on going that deep. I didn't plan on going that deep with that day job extravaganza. Oh, if you guys want to tweet me, okay, first of all, if you want to find me, I'm trying to get all the social medias to be the same, and it's like such a fucking, like, I don't know, it's like, it's easier to like change your social security number, I swear to God. So anyway, if you want to follow me, as always, on Instagram, I'm the Thomas Anonymous on Instagram. Also on Facebook now, to find the show, we're now The Thomas Anonymous on Facebook, so that is new. And on Twitter, sorry, just kind of burped. I'm trying to get Twitter to be Thomas Anonymous. I mean, I have my Twitter, at Tommy Natoli, TommyNatoli, at Tommy Natoli, doesn't do anything on Twitter, but I'm trying to be more on Twitter, and I want to be on Twitter with the show, with Thomas Anonymous. And so with my other Twitter account, I'm trying to find a handle, you know, like Thomas Anonymous is taken, which sucks because it's taken by a guy who has 3 goddamn followers. Look him up. At Thomas Anonymous on Twitter. He's been on since 2009. He has 3 followers, and he has a super secret shady account. Like, you have to put in a request to follow him, which I have. And hopefully I will get, like, approved, and then I can message him and say, please, like, can you give up this name? Because clearly I have a brand, and you fucking don't, okay? So I hope I am able to do that in a more proactive way and not totally insult him. I won't have any money to offer him, so I don't know how well this is going to go. But either way, follow the show, follow me. I'm going to be posting something on there. Oh, no, I want you to tweet because I want to know what people are doing for water containers. Like, what are you keeping? I'm like, all right, here's some more information you don't care about. I get really OCD about liquid. I need to have water with me all the time, everywhere I go. I don't know if this is a thing because I've been in LA now for so long, but I want to be prepared for everything. And I know, you know, I could leave the house and I could be stuck in traffic for 2 hours and not know, or I could, like, you know, you just never know. So even if we're going, like, to somewhere that's like 10 minutes down the street, I'm like, I will go back to the apartment to get my bottle of water or my whatever. Basically, long story short, I need to know what kind of container, what kind of thermos people are using for water. I don't want to keep making the world a horrible place by buying plastic every other day. I'm just now getting the plastic straws out of my house because I'm trying to, you know, believe that fucking conspiracy or whatever. But I need to know what you're doing for your water, because I need to have a lot of water every day. We all do. I don't want it to be in plastic, and I don't want to be weighed down by the commitment of a big jug that I have to wash out. If your plan involves anything to do with, like, washing out, reusing, having to bring with me, I'm really not interested, which is the big problem, because I don't know what I'm going to do, because it's either commit to a container or buy fucking water bottles, bottled water, whatever, all the time. So best of luck to me, I guess. If you guys have any tips for me, find me on Instagram, the Thomas Anonymous, or find me on Twitter at Tommy Natoli. I think that was my last gripe. My last bullet point I have has nothing to do that anyone cares about, but if you do follow me on Instagram at the Thomas Anonymous, you will see my Insta stories and pictures where I post my beautiful, beautiful baby puppy. He's actually not a puppy, but his name's Piggy, and he's fantastic. And my thing with Piggy, my bullet point about Piggy, is that he is, like, coming out of his puppy years. Piggy is, like, gonna be 4 years old in October, and like, he just has this, like, new demeanor about him. Like, he still likes to play. He loves his toy. He loves to run around. He's still wagging his tail. You know, he's still, like, puppy. He's a small dog. He's like a min pin chihuahua. What's the, you know, a little bit of that hot dog doggy. So he's like a mix of everything. He's a little dog. So he'll always be a puppy in a way, but, like, his demeanor's changing. He's evolving from a piggy to, like, a Mr. Pig. And again, this is totally useless and nobody cares about this, but these are the bullet points I wrote down, so I do what I want. All right, that's it for today. Thank you so much for downloading. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. You can go ahead and leave a rating, leave a review. We all know how I feel about that, because they don't work. So actually, don't do that. Instead, you're going to tweet iTunes and tell them your reviews don't work for Thomas Anonymous, and we really love that podcast and you're stupid. So go ahead and do that. Thanks so much for listening. Tell a friend, tell 2 friends, find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, basically anywhere you can get a podcast, you can get this podcast. So tell your friends. When in doubt, you can always say go to TommyNatoli.com, and that will bring you to all the podcast episodes. I want to thank Michelle with 1L for humoring me and letting me call her while we record today. I want to thank bensound.com and Majestic Color. I think that's the name. I'm pretty sure. We thank them enough. I should just write it in the thing, but it's nice to say. I'm like using your music, so thank you for that. We seem to be doing an every other week. We did our season premiere 2 weeks ago, and now we're back this week. So in 2 weeks, there will be another episode. And again, follow me on Instagram to find out when that's dropping on Instagram at The Thomas Anonymous. If you want to send a message on Facebook, you can find the show on Facebook at The Thomas Anonymous. See, it's all one thing. It's getting better. All right, well, we will see you, we as in me, will not see you, but talk to you again in 2 weeks. Okay, bye.